Do you like grapes? Then you'll love Scottish grapes. My family has been unsuccessfully trying to grow grapes on a rocky hillside on the Isle of Mull for generations. But this year, with the help of Mitchell's, and specifically the Mitchell's Death Valley Laser Heat Lamp, we were able to grow a very, very small number of wrinkly and acidic grapes before the rocky ground was torn apart by the laser and a corner of the island and everything my family has ever known sank into the sea. Buy your grapes now at Scottish Grapes. Get your Scottish Grapes. Grape. And if it's not Mitchell's, get back in the truck.
Hello, and welcome to the Beef and Dairy Network podcast, the number one podcast for those involved, or just interested, in the production of beef animals and dairy herds. The Beef and Dairy Network podcast is the podcast companion to the Beef and Dairy Network website and printed magazine, brought to you by Scottish Grapes and the Mitchell's Death Valley Laser Heat Lamp. Now, like most people, my life is mainly spent in a series of rooms. The bedroom, the bathroom, the kitchen room. But this month, I'm going to be spending some more time in the biggest room of all, outside. Because this month is the Bovine Farmers Union's official Nature Month, and, of course, the natural world lives outside, apart from pets and vermin, who should be destroyed. That's vermin rather than pets, unless you've got one of those dogs that's bitten a kid. The beef industry is, of course, an integral part of nature. Think about what you're doing right now, whether you're looking at the forest you're currently felling to build pasture land or crop dusting a field with heavy pesticide. That's nature. To help celebrate Nature Month, the Bovine Farmers Union have teamed up with the UK Flora and Fauna Trust to present Field Hour, an event aimed at getting the public engaged with nature.
Hello, I'm Anna Lehman. I'm the Outreach Officer for the UK Flora and Fauna Trust.
I spoke to Anna about Field Hour, but first, I wanted to address the controversy that some of her recent public engagement initiatives have attracted. There's one controversy that I want to start with, Anna.
Okay.
So this first one, and I assume that you'd categorise this as a failure, really, was your scheme where, and tell me if I've got this wrong, you were encouraging people to defecate directly into a stream or a brook.
Running water.
And that was as a way to connect with nature.
There are lots of reasons for that, which I stand by to this day. Unfortunately, in the West, we invented toilets. And a really big problem with that is that your knees aren't elevated. You're not squatting, you're sitting, and it really can wreck your bowels.
Right.
So to get humans to squat was really for their own benefit. And running water, you know, you're not flushing, you're not wasting water. And you've got nature's bidet there, so you're washing yourself. So there's a lot of great things about running water defecation initiative.
And were you leading from the front, so to speak?
I would go and watch people do it. I was very much involved. I was there on the sidelines. I was cheering. I was helping people find the right space. But when it comes to it, I don't have the lower body strength to squat in the water for the amount of time it would take me. I need a long time to do my business, and I can't spend that long outside, particularly in extreme temperatures. And the scheme ran throughout the winter.
Well, that's it. And you know, there's a video I found on YouTube of a retired postman's choir.
Yes.
Who you've got involved with this, and they're actually singing Jerusalem.
Yeah.
While squatting in what looks like a freezing river.
Mm.
Several of them keel over and are taken away by the water. I don't know what happened to them.
That was nature's burial. I mean, again, that's an older demographic. A lot of them had really given up. This was their final defecation, if we're going to say. And then they let nature take them away. They returned to mother.
When you said they let nature take them away, you're saying that they planned for that to happen? They knew that was going to happen that morning when they turned up? Or had they just thought, oh, there's this scheme that's being, you know, promoted by the UK Flora and Fauna Trust. I get their monthly newsletter because I give them £5 a month and get the free blue tit plush toy every year and blah, 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 blah. They get the newsletter. They think, oh, I like getting involved in the stuff they do. I really enjoyed the wreath making workshop we did last year. Yeah. I really enjoyed the bat walk. This will just be another thing like that that I can enjoy with my friends.
We have a asterisk, a tiny star, just at the end of a letter on a word in our newsletter. And it always says, with any initiative, if you're past 60, please join us, please get involved, that this could be the end. And knowing that, they know what they're letting themselves in for. And in our team, we know that they are relinquishing control of their survival to the trust and to nature. And it can be beautiful. It really, when you've watched an old man and an old woman be swept away, they've been wiped clean, slate empty.
So you think there's something beautiful about someone being taken by nature rather than, without becoming too macabre, you know, people often want to die at home in their bed, for example. That's the way people want to go. You think that that's wrongheaded?
Well, you know, I'd hate to die in a river having just, you know, absolutely smashed it with my own feces. I don't want to die like that, but a lot of people do. And we've got two tiny stars just at the end of another word on the newsletter. And if you follow and you look for the double star at the bottom, it will say, if you want to die warm in bed with your family, don't come on the, you know, running water defecation scheme. This time, people change. You might reach your late 90s and think, I'm going to get involved with that initiative. And that's great.
Now, I understand, as you say, that you don't bear any legal responsibility for what happens on those trips. Because, as you say, the asterisk, that stands up in court and did stand up in court, I believe, when that was taken to the highest court in the land in the end.
Which was an honour.
And obviously, pre-Brexit, that was the European Court of Human Rights.
Yeah.
And you were being tried in the morning, and then that afternoon they were trying Yugoslavian war criminals. So that really shows, you know, the level of seriousness with which this was being taken.
It was great because we had a photographer ready, assuming that we would be found not guilty, and a tiny vial of poison ready just in case it went the other way.
Oh, right. So you'd planned the dramatic courtroom suicide.
Everybody has a different idea of how to go. And that's what I've been trying to say for a little while during this chat. And I don't want to be, you know, chitting and getting, you know, taken down a stream to the end. I don't want to be flowing in a river of my own shit towards my own death, but I don't mind the public spectacle. And a law court is a space for drama. I don't mind that dramatic end. And it's great publicity for the trust.
As I say, you weren't found guilty because of the asterisks on your website and on the form that people signed. However, the thing that I couldn't quite get my head around was that, those people who had signed up, they had sort of signed away their rights.
Yeah.
But what about all the people who live downstream? Of course, there was the huge outbreak of cholera in Norwich, which was later tracked back to one of your events where 1,000 people all defecated the river at once, creating this kind of toxic serpent, which sort of snaked its way into the water system of Norwich.
Yeah.
Again, killing hundreds of people. The kind of cholera we haven't seen since the height of the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah. So what do you want me to say about that?
Well, what I'm saying is those people in Norwich, you know, were just going about their everyday life. They didn't see the asterisks. They didn't sign up for anything.
It's really hard. Humans, we're a wise species. We are, you know. I take my hat off to myself and to all humans. But if you turn the tap on and it's brown and it absolutely stinks and you still drink it, are you helping your own species? I would say you're not. I don't know if you've heard of Charles Darwin.
The beak guy.
That's exactly it. Survivor of the fittest. And I mean, my East Anglian brothers and sisters, I'm sorry. The people that you lost were not helping us, either in East Anglia or just as an international species. They drank other people's shit. They made a squash out of human excrement.
And that was their fault, you're saying?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, well, it wasn't just that initiative, actually, that has been controversial. I'm going to make reference to another one where... Yeah. and there was less information about this on the web, so maybe you can fill me in.
Sure.
There seemed to be some kind of scheme where primary school aged children were taken into woodland by volunteers from the UK Flora and Fauna Trust. And there they were guided to trap, kill, cook and eat magpies.
Yeah. And what was your question? Do you
not think that was a mistake? I think is my question.
You really wound me up because it's so annoying to me that some people are so, including you, are so precious about what animals we eat. You know, if it's a chicken breast and it's refrigerated in Tesco under that horrible plastic coating, you know, then I'll eat it. But we're teaching children, sorry, I'm getting emotional, but we're teaching children survival skills to trap and cook and then consume another animal, it's a bird, like a chicken. So why we're getting criticism is absolutely beyond me.
I think a lot of parents were just concerned about the way that their children had changed when they came back from the course, you know. I have a quote here that I found online from an anonymous parent.
Okay.
They say, "My daughter came back from the workshop. She was a different person. From then on, whenever I turned my back, she would be straight outside. And before I knew it, she'd be choking back a magpie. She now eats up to 10 magpies a day. She doesn't speak to me or her father. In fact, the only words she will say to us are, 'Bring the magpies all to me. I will feast on their meat tonight.'"
Okay.
So I think you can see how that would be quite distressing for a parent, and how a parent might actually be much more happy with a situation where they don't have to, you know, teach their children how to trap and kill their own meat.
I don't want to be part of that. I want to kill the magpie. I want to eat the organs while they're still warm. And I don't understand why everybody is always denying themselves the pleasure of trapping and either cooking or making sushi out of whatever beast it is. And I want children to share in that joy. And that's why I have this job.
We'll be back to our interview with Anna in a moment. But first, some of your letters this month on the topic of nature. Henry from Cornwall writes, "As a dairy farmer, I feel closely attached to nature and all its wonders. Yes, cattle are a domesticated animal, and in some ways you could describe that as unnatural, but its link with nature becomes clear when you consider that they are evolved from ancient wild dogs." Not sure that's quite right, but thank you, Henry. Agatha from Hendon writes, "We are too concerned as a society about what we see as natural. Is it natural for us to drink the milk of a cow? No, it isn't, but it's become the cornerstone of our day. Is it natural for us to be able to fly to other countries? No, it isn't, but this happens all the time. Is it natural for us to sleep every night in a bath full of warm, warm hens? No, but I can't sleep any other way. Please help me, Agatha." Thanks for that, Agatha. And if anyone has any words of wisdom for her, do send them in. And finally, Mr. Prince from Gateshead writes, "My interest in nature extends to an interest in naturism, which means I spend most days as naked as the day I was born, by which I mean I start the day naked and covered in fluid, then I'm toweled off by a nurse and wrapped in a blanket, and I put on a little knitted hat." Whatever works for you, Alan. Now, back to our interview with Anna Lehmann. Okay, well, let's get on to what you're here to talk about. It's a big new initiative, and it's called Field Hour.
We've teamed up with the Bovine Farmers Union to create Field Hour, which is a really wicked new scheme. And all we're saying to people is, take an hour out of your day, get yourself into a cow field, any cow field, and just stand there, embedded in that gorgeous cow fieldness, and write down what you see, and send the results to us.
Right, so you want people to stand there and just look at what animals and plants they can see and write it all down for you?
Yeah.
We've been sent a pack here where you can tick off the various things you're likely to see.
Yeah.
It says here to get a pack, they should just go to almost any petrol station in the UK should be have these.
Mm-hmm.
Is this right? You need to buy at least 40 litres of premium unleaded or diesel fuel?
Yes.
and you'll get one of these?
Yep, and you get it for free.
What about people who would like to be involved in Field Hour but who don't have a vehicle to fill up?
You don't need to put the petrol, the fuel in a car. People are really creative. Credit where credit's due. And we've had a lot of people getting down to the petrol stations with their own containers, and they're getting their 40 litres, and they're just taking them with them to the cow field. Set it alight and attracting animals to the plains.
Well, let's talk about the actual flora and fauna that someone might hope to see when they're out doing Field Hour. Yeah. You know, you say on the pack, you'll be surprised at how much you'll be able to see within an hour.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, when you're walking through the countryside, you see the odd cow, you see the odd bird. Mm. But how often do we stop and really take stock of what's around us? And I think that this is what this is about, isn't it?
It's amazing. This is my favourite bit to talk about, because I'm really excited to get people excited to just immerse themselves in nature and consume its bounty.
Can you give me a specific example of the kind of thing that people might see out in the field?
So if the cow field is near running water, again, you might see another human, which is not fauna, but another human defecating, or you might see on a river bank a delicious water vole, which is exciting. And
you say delicious water vole?
No, I said water vole.
No, you definitely said delicious. It sounded to me like you were sort of saying that people would or that you have eaten a water vole at some time to know that it's delicious or not.
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, if you wanted to eat a water vole, you don't even need much. Tiny camping stove, boil it up, wrap it in a dock leaf, eat it.
Just to be clear, are you recommending people boil a water vole? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Because before you said consume nature's bounty, and I thought that was like a sort of metaphor for, you know, taking in the wonder of nature. But
I'm an outreach officer. My job's not to tell people what to do or not to do.
Okay, well, let's talk about other animals you might come across. Yeah. Is there anything that you need to be careful of? Obviously, you know, cows can be spooked and they can run at you, and that's obviously very dangerous. Could you come across, I don't know, what if you disturbed a badger's set?
Yes.
Angry badgers?
You do need to be careful. Very tough little things. And if you come across one, I would say, don't worry, don't panic. It's all about slow roast. So take them back home, pluck them, low and slow in the oven. Done.
Sorry. I didn't mean... Are you saying that, again, it sounds like you're recommending people cook them and then eat them? Is that... I sort of meant, like, what's the problem? You know, if you come across a badger, is there... Might it bite you? Your answer was... Roast it, I think.
Yeah, they're tough. Often they're riddled with TB. It's difficult, but 100 degrees, 8 hours, the tastiest, softest thing you can imagine, like eating the softest mattress, eating nature's duvet.
So the pack doesn't mention eating anything. So the pack says just write down and, you know, make a list of all the animals you see.
Yeah.
Oh, look, there's a buzzard. Oh, look, there's a field mouse. Oh, look, there's a... There's no mention here about cooking or eating anything.
Yeah, I didn't mention it.
What do you mean? You literally just gave it a recipe for cooking a badger at 100 degrees.
No.
Which for me also sounds far too low. You need more heat than that.
You just need to give enough time.
Isn't it going to dry out, though, if it's in the oven for 8 hours?
Marinade. So, firstly, I'm not telling anybody to eat a badger. That is absolutely ridiculous. I'm saying if you have one in the oven at 100, olive oil, salt, lemon, and its own juices, 8 hours.
Covered or uncovered?
Cover it. You need to cover it. That will increase the pressure within the badger's body to cook it, and it will cook out the TB.
Well, it's... I think the listeners will make up their own minds as to whether they want to be involved in that. But I will be doing my field hour later today. So I guess wish me luck.
Good luck. And let me know if you want any advice on condiments.
Thanks to Anna Lehman for speaking to me. Subsequent to recording that interview, the UK Flora and Fauna Trust got in contact and asked me to read the following statement. We wish to make it clear that the UK Flora and Fauna Trust is dedicated to the conservation of Britain's flora and fauna, and so we do not recommend that you should eat wildlife. However, we do understand that there are certain extreme life and death situations in which consuming a woodland creature, for example a badger, may be unavoidable. Before you put the badger in the oven, crank it up as high as it will go, which means that when it goes in, you can really crisp up that skin. Then turn it down to 100 degrees C, that's 210 Fahrenheit, to get that meat going low and slow. When the meat slips from the bone, serve in a toasted brioche bun with rustic slaw, pickled onions, a fried egg, and a bit of punchy horseradish jam. Pair with a dry or semi-dry New World White and share with a loved one by candlelight. After dinner, put on a movie, an early career Hanks, maybe Big or A League of Their Own. Open another bottle of white wine and reminisce about holidays that you've enjoyed together. Remember that time you were in Portugal and you saw a man getting kicked in the face by a donkey? I wonder how he is these days. I wonder how that affected him long term. More after this. Businesses have had to be flexible this year, from working remotely to pivoting their business models for long-term survival. For example, performing arts companies are streaming stage shows, musicals, and symphony concerts online, and brands are spending more on e-commerce advertising due to projected rising online sales. If you're in charge of hiring for your business, these pivots have made your job even more challenging. Thankfully, there's one place that you can count on to make hiring easier: ZipRecruiter.com/beef. ZipRecruiter's technology finds the right people for your job and invites them to apply. It's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/beef. That's ZipRecruiter.com/beef.
Hi, I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa.
And we're the hosts of One Bad Mother, a podcast about parenting. Parenting is hard, and we have no advice, but we do see you doing it. Honk if you like to do it. Didn't we have a bumper sticker a while back that was like, yeah, honk if you did it? That's what it was.
I think it was honk if you're doing it.
Why did we not ever make those?
We did make them. I think they're still in the Max Fun store.
Honk, honk, you're doing it.
Thanks, Biz. So are you.
Each week, we'll be here to remind you that you're doing a good job.
You can find us on MaximumFun.org. Honk, honk,
toot, toot.
Having heard all about Field Hour from Anna, it was time for me to go and do it.
Right, so I found my spot at the corner of this lovely field, and I'm going to be here for the next hour, spotting the wildlife that will no doubt show itself. Let the games commence! Okay, number one, I've seen a crow. I've only been here less than 2 minutes, and I've already seen a crow. This is a great start. Okay, approaching me now are, well, they're not fauna. It's a group of 4 or 5 young, I guess, teenagers in tracksuits, and they've got that threatening way about them, you know, that teenagers have, trying to be the big man. Hello there. He's called me a wanker. Right, they've broken into a run, so I'm just going to, yeah, I think I better get moving. This gate. Okay, yeah, very threatening demeanour, and it looks like they've... what I didn't realise is one of them's got a quad bike, so the situation's escalated somewhat. I'm just going to keep my distance and just break into a little run here. I think Field Hour is probably officially cancelled. Oh no, he's speeding up. okay, I think I've lost the teenagers now. They've got bored. They've had their fun. Only problem is now I really don't know which direction I'm facing. I don't know where the car is. Yes, I'm lost. Okay, I've been lost now for 4 hours. I can't bring myself to tell you what I've just eaten. Let's just say the beak was the hardest bit. Followed closely in second place by the black and white feathers. Oh, really, really nasty. Do not feel good after eating the magpie. Yes, it was a magpie. Don't feel good at all. Bit of a temperature, I think. And a pressing need to shit. Maybe I shouldn't have eaten it. I panicked. So, I'm still very much lost. But I've found this small, fast-running brook. I do need to go. When you need to go, you need to go. You know, nature is calling. So I think this is the place. Yes, I think this is probably a trousers-off job. So here we go. Okay, I've just got back out of the river and someone has stolen my trousers. Someone stole my trousers, so I assume it's the teenagers. I assume this is their idea of fun. I can't see them, I assume they're hiding in a nearby bush. If you can hear me, this isn't clever. I'm now trouserless. I'm a grown man lost in the wilderness and I'm trouserless, so please. They're not your trousers. Come on, you've had your fun. You've had your fun. Laugh it up. Sure, laugh it up. But you've had your fun now. Bring my trousers back. My trousers. My trousers. Please.
Hello, Dr. Sam Archer.
Hi, Dr. Archer, it's the host of the Beef and Dairy Network podcast.
Oh, is everything okay?
Look, I'm not sure. It's a long story, but I've eaten a magpie. Is that okay?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think it is, no.
Oh, no. Okay, I don't feel great, Dr. Sam, so that's why I'm calling.
Okay. Have you heard the magpie rhyme? The one for sorrow, two for joy, three for a girl, four for a boy?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, okay. I mean, so that's where you're at the minute. You've eaten one magpie and it's one for sorrow.
Oh, I am experiencing sorrow.
Right.
I'm not sure I like where this is going.
I mean, if I had to give you a piece of medical advice, it would be, I think, you need to eat another magpie.
Oh, is there any shortcut to that? Because the first one was really hard work. Especially the beak area.
I mean, on the plus side, once you finish the second magpie, you will experience joy. So I guess if you power through, you've got that sort of feeling of elation to look forward to.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, well, you know, you're the doctor.
Yeah.
Okay, before I go, second question. How long can a man survive in the wilderness without any trousers?
Are you aware of the rule of three? So basically that is you'll survive 3 weeks without food, 3 days without water, and 3 hours without trousers.
I didn't know about the trousers bit of that.
Yeah, they're essential. They're essential for survival.
Oh, God. Okay, well, the clock's ticking. I better get going. Thank you, Dr. Archer.
Godspeed.
I'm about a meter and a half from a magpie. Here goes. Oh, fuck. Got ya. Bounty. The bounty of the fields.
I feel the warm soil between my fingertips, ripe with potential. The soil of Britain.
I realise now that I was hiding behind my trousers. You know, it was my trousers. We are our trousers, but sometimes you have to take the trousers off. Or someone has to take those trousers from you more realistically, because you're not going to give them up on your own accord. But I think as a society, you know, we're protected. We're coddled by our trousers. And I know that now. And I will never wear trousers again. Well, probably I'll wear them to weddings and things. Court appearances. But in general, I'll sort of try and cut down. Maybe just wear shorts or some sort of kilt. You know, I feel freedom, you know? I feel free. I do wish I was wearing trousers, though. It's fucking freezing. Bring the magpies all to me. I shall feast on their meat.
Emergency, which service do you require?
Definitely mountain rescue for a kickoff. I'll have an ambulance as well, if possible. Probably the police, yeah. I think that'll do.
What's your emergency?
Okay, so I'm lost in the wilderness. And some teenagers have stolen my trousers.
Right.
And I've eaten two magpies.
Okay, is that all of it?
What do you mean, is that all of it? I'm lost in the... I'm literally minutes from death, you know? I've not got any trousers on and it's freezing, so...
Okay, all right, okay.
Maybe you could send a helicopter or something, that'd be useful.
Could you tell us your location, please?
I'm lost in the wilderness! That's the whole point, is I don't know my location. Can't you... You can do your thing where you can track my phone, can't you?
Well, yeah, we can, but could you just not look on Google Maps?
I can't... I'm in a life-and-death situation here. My hands are shaking too much to use Google Maps.
Okay, fine. All right, well, we're tracking you now. It says here that you're less than 20 metres from a Burger King.
Am I?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, hang on. Oh, there it is. Yeah. Yeah. There it is. Great. Okay. Whoa. Okay. Well, that's a stroke of luck, isn't it? So, I guess you can call off the mountain rescue guys and the...
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't need anyone, I don't think. And,
Okay.
I'm off for a whopper, I guess.
You're a whopper, mate.
Thank you.
So if you're interested in Field Hour, and it's a great way to keep the kids quiet for an hour, or in my case, nine, just pick up a pack from your nearest petrol station. So, that's all we've got time for this month. But if you're after more beef and dairy news, get over to our website now, where you can read all the usual stuff, as well as our off-topic section, where this month we talk pensions with John McEnroe. So, until next time, beef out. Thanks to Amy Hoggett, Tom Crowley, Tom Neenan, and Alistair Satchell.
Hi, it's me, Dave Hill, from before, here to tell you about my brand new show on Maximum Fun, the Dave Hill Good Time Hour, which combines my old Maximum Fun show, Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident, with my old radio show, the Damn Dave Hill Show, into one new futuristic program from the future. If you like delightful conversation with incredible guests, technical difficulties, and actual phone calls from real-life listeners, you've just hit a street called easy. I'm also joined by my incredible co-host, the boy criminal Chris Gersbeck. Say hi, Chris.
Hey, Dave. It's really great.
Enough, Chris. And New Jersey chicken rancher Dez. Say hi, Dez.
Hey, Dave.
The Dave Hill Good Time Hour. Brand new episodes every Friday on Maximum Fun.
Plus, the show's not even an hour. It's 90 minutes.
Take that, stupid rules.
We nailed it.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.